We are now in lecture 14. Who is in charge of my inner genius? That's the theme that runs through all of our talks. And the text is, beyond the known universe exists space so grand and inclusive that it boggles the thought. Space is endless and yet existenceless. Imagination takes flight. Creativity continues. Beyond the known universe exists space so grand and inclusive that it boggles the thought. Space is endless and yet existenceless. Imagination takes flight and creativity continues. Every one of us has within us a creative imagination, a genius, an idea of all sorts of wonderful and beautiful things that we can accomplish. Now, what sort of things would you like to accomplish? What sort of things would you like to fulfill in your life? What sort of things would you like to bring out in your world? Every one of you has the, not the possibility, but not the probability, but the actuality of experiencing any dream you could ever dream. Now, some of you dream that you had a great castle, you got a great house, you got a great mansion, you got lots of money, you have lots of this and lots of that. You dream all those sort of things. Well, now, that's nice, but I'm talking about being realistic, not from the point of view that just because it's so grand you can't have it, but because you do not believe you deserve it. You do not believe it's the type of thing that it's your nature to have. And when you do not believe it's the type of thing your nature to have, you won't have it. No other reason. Now, does a young girl think that she is beautiful? Yes. Is she always beautiful? Not necessarily. But what makes her beautiful? What makes her beautiful is that she likes herself. And when a young girl likes herself, she is beautiful to herself, and she's beautiful to everyone else in the world. Everyone looks at her and says, isn't she lovely? Isn't she a thoughtful girl? Isn't she a beautiful, gentle, loving, kind, sweet, wonderful girl? And every young man, he thinks to himself, yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful for me to have the ideal woman? Wouldn't it be wonderful for me to have the ideal person in my life that I could enjoy and have as my special person? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, yes, it is. But are you worthy of it? To yourself. Do you like yourself? Do you think that anyone living with you would be happy? Anyone living with you would enjoy being with you? As a young man, it doesn't matter your age, 10, 30, whatever. Whatever you think of yourself, that's what your world is. And when you think of yourself as a nice person, I like me, you know, can we all say that and mean it? When we can, I like it. This little response here, huh? Yes. We can and do say it and do mean it, but we have to say it under all circumstances. We have to say it under the circumstances when we're out with our lady friend, we're out with our sweetheart, and the car conks out, and we're in the middle of a rainstorm. So we have to get out of the car, fix the tire, or fix the engine, or do something so that we can continue. And in the process, you get dirty as can be. Your hands are dirty, your face is dirty, your clothes are dirty, and you look like something the cat dragged in. You just look miserable. Now, if you can be in that situation saying, I like me, this is the silliest thing to happen to us. Isn't it the silliest thing? We're such a beautiful couple. We're such a nice couple of guys. And why should this sort of thing happen to us? And then something comes along. When you say, why should this happen to us, meaning happily, that only good can come to you, and mean it, only good can come to you, then another car will come along, and it'll have a problem, and it'll stop right in front of you. And the people in the car are kind of ritzy, you know. They have the bucks. They have the money. And they say to you, oh, son, would you give us a hand here? And you're already dirty. So what difference does it make? So you go over there and you say, well, glad to help you. And so you help them get their car going in this big rainstorm and this big flood with water splashing up on the engine and everything. And you know just what to do because you just finished getting yours going. And you don't think, what are they going to give me? You think, I like me. So I like everybody in my world. And the man says, well, that's very thoughtful of you. Here's a tip. And he gives you some money. It's nothing. It's nice, but it's nothing. It could be a lot of money, but it's still nothing. And then the man says, what's your name? And you tell him. And he says, you're a very responsible and a very wonderful young fellow, because here we are in the middle of this terrible rainstorm with all this misery, and you're getting all dirty fixing my car, and you don't even think that's bad, you don't even think it's terrible. What's your name? What's your address? What's your telephone number? How can I get in contact with you? Well, here it is. Here's my name and telephone number. Now, you are so innocent. You are so innocent, you're not thinking he's going to do something good for you. You're just thinking that he wants your name and address. You don't have preconceived ideas that you're going to use this situation to help you professionally or anything else. You're just a nice guy. Can you be that way? Oh, yes, you can. If you train yourself to say, I like me. When you say, I like me, you don't go into this world looking for a handout. You go into this world looking to give your hand out to all the world and say, bless you, love you. What can I do to help you? Sincerely, what can I do to make your life more wonderful? And so you get back in your car and your sweetheart is sitting there saying, you are so wonderful. You help everybody, don't you? Let's get out of here before somebody else stops too. And so you drive away. And your car is running fine because you knew what to do and you fixed it. You get home. And in a few days, you have a phone call. And it's a phone call from a large company in the city. And the company said, would you please come down to our offices? We'd like to see you. And you have no idea what this is about. You don't even know whether it's the police or whether it's the school or district or whatever it is. And you don't think it is anything bad because you're a good person. You like yourself. So you go down to this office. And in this office, which is quite a nice office, in this office, you meet the secretary, and she says, oh, you're John. How wonderful. I heard so much about you. You are such a fine young man. She thought, how did she hear about me, you know? What does she know about? He's still naive. He's not putting two and two together, thinking that this is the guy he helped on the road. And pretty soon, he's called into a big office. And here's the old big daddy sitting there behind his desk and looking very proper, but very, very gentle and loving. And he says, John, you did a very good turn for us. But you not only did a good turn for us, you did it with the right attitude of mind, and finding people with the right attitude of mind is so difficult. Finding people with the right attitude of mind is so important for a well-running organization. John, would you be available to apply for a job here? Well, sure. What would you want me to do? No, John. What do you want to do? What kind of work can you do? What sort of thing would you like to do? Well, I can do most anything, janitor work. I can do, stock boy work. I can do a shop work or something. No, John. I want you intermingling with our people because your attitude is so positive and so glorious. Not all these words I'm using, but it's the ideas. Your attitude is so good that If you rubbed off with that little bit of that attitude on our people, it'd be wonderful. Oh, well, really, thank you, but I didn't know I had an attitude like that. I didn't know. One who has an attitude like that never knows that they have an attitude like that. But you're just a fabulous boy. You're a fabulous man. I'm so happy that we ran into you the other day. I'm just so pleased. And my wife said, you've got to call that young man and have him be part of your organization. He is just the right type of person. And so you work together. And he has you work in management and sales. It doesn't take intelligence to be in management and sales. You merely do what you're told to do. And so you're in management and sales. And the story goes on from there. And the next thing you know, the man has no family. He has no people. He has his wife. And so he said, John, you're a very personal person and I feel very close to you. Would you mind if I adopted you?
Adopted me, my God.
Sure, you know, I know my folks wouldn't care. So John goes to his parents and says, this man wants to adopt me. What do you think of that? And they say, well, check him out. See if he's a really honorable man. See if he's got good intentions, good morals, and good things like that. And see that he's a good person. All right. So John goes to the police department. He goes places like that and asks about this big man. And they know all about his background. And they say, yes, he has helped many young people to accomplish great good. He is an asset to the community, and on and on. And next thing you know, the story goes on, and your life gets just better and better. Now, could you have dreamed such a thing would happen by you being charismatically outgoing in your personality? Could you have dreamed that such a thing would happen to you? It happens all the time, whether you know it or not. I know it happened several times to me. They didn't want to adopt me, but several times it happened. Because I was so ingenuine, so innocent, so a good charisma, a good feeling, a good attitude. Now, I tell these stories to you all the time. And I could tell you a lot more, and I could tell you a lot more, even more exciting stories, but it all makes me look so good. And I'm not intending to do that. That I am intending to show you that you have within you all the magic that it takes to be a marvelous and a fantastic being in anything you do. Peter thinks his family are so great. His children are doing such wonderful things. But he bitches at him and argues with him now and then. He complains about him now and then. He forgets. He forgets. But you have to not forget. You have to say, I like me. And if Peter would always say, I like me, before he ever responded to anything in his world, it would be perfect. It would be, your family would be ideal. But no, you have to get the old school teacher in there. You have to get the old slap him on the hand with a stick sort of thing. You have to get to prove to them that you're the boss, that you're the father, that you're the dad. You're not alone. You're not alone. That's sort of a cultural idiom that comes out. But you don't have to do that. Now you can stop. Now you can put a new cause in motion. Now you can put a new attitude in motion for you, for your life, for your experience, for your world, for yourself, for your adoption, for your movement into a circle of more and more blessedness. Life does offer these gifts, but you can't expect every experience to bring you the same return. Many will bring you even greater return. When you have the humility to do what is right to do under all circumstances and not feel someone else is responsible to pay your way as you're doing it, you will be up that ladder in no time, and the world will be pushing you up that ladder, encouraging you to be the finest, the best, and the most wonderful thing that you could ever be. It's up to you. Now, you have a certain something about you, each one of you. You have a certain magic about you, a certain love about you. And that magic and that love that you have about you makes you so desirable. It makes the world want to adopt you. Makes the world want you to be their child, because if they had a child, they would like the child to be what you are. But you made yourself what you are. They didn't make you what you are, and nobody else made you what you are. Your parents didn't make you are. You made you what you are. You took out of life, you took out of all experience, everything that is good and beautiful. You took it out, and you applied it to yourself. By how?
I like me.
By saying, I like me. It's so utterly simple, but so tremendously powerful to bring about in your life the results you want. Now, I give seminars all the time, and I give seminars on subjects all around the park. And as I give these seminars and these subjects, I try to change my emphasis, my topics. I try to change some of the things, but it always comes back to liking yourself. You cannot have the gift of the universe if you don't like yourself. The man who walked down the path and played a game in preparation to playing a game with his children, closing his eyes and not seeing the pot of gold on the path that the rabbi and a neighbor had set out there for him to give him as a gift that he had to find, because he wouldn't accept anything from them because he was too humble to do that. He couldn't do that. And they put it out there. And so the game he played with his children, and he was going to play that evening with his children, was that he was going to be blindfolded, and he's going to walk as far as he could blindfolded and stay on the road. Well, he didn't need a blindfold. He closed his eyes. And he walked right across the bridge, right past the pot of gold, right down the road, until he was stopped by the rabbi and the neighbor. And they said, "Did you just cross the bridge?" "Yes." "Did you see something there?" "No. I was playing a game that I'm going to play with my children when I get home. We're going to play this, that we close our eyes and we do all these things." Now, wow, ha, ha, ha. What can you do to help a person like that who is so pure and so innocent and so wonderful and so generous and so loving as a father, so loving as a person? What can you do? Well, what you can do, rich man, what you can do, rabbi, is to leave them alone. To leave them alone and bless them and say, "May your life be filled with even more glorious things." And then what happens? Their life is filled with even more glorious things. Your life is filled with even more glorious things as you listen within and follow what the divine within tells you to do. Do what the divine within tells you to do. Follow and listen, and also say, "I like me." Can you say, "I like me"?
I like me.
Do you mean it?
Yes. I like me.
Why are you saying I like me?
Because it's true.
Yes? Because it's true?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. When you say I like me because it's true, then all good things happen to you. All good things happen to you. Jesus spoke to his disciples, and he told his disciples, "Follow me." And the disciples said, "Well, I have to go and bury my father. He's just about died, just about dead, and it's our tradition to be with our parents at the time of their passing, and he's in the process of that." And Jesus said, "Go and bury the dead. But he who is with me is with me." And he told them the traditions of the past were not necessarily current anymore. They were not necessarily valid. There was one of Swami Rama's students. You may have read it or heard the story before. And he was walking along the road, and he just saw a young man with a gathering of people around him, and the young man took an ant and cut it up into a number of pieces, you know, at each segment of its body. And then, after he cut it up, then he says, okay, snap his finger, and the ant was back together again. The parts were separated around, but he snapped his finger, and the ant was back together again. Well, Swami Rama's student, who hadn't been there at the moment, but was there now, saw this, and he said to the young fellow, where did you learn that? Where did you learn? Who was your master? And the other fellow says, our master. I have the same master you do. And, well, he never taught me that. That's right. You're off doing things all the time. You're not staying for classes. You're not paying attention. You're not sitting alert in the classes. No wonder you don't get those things. Well, that's not fair. So he ran to his teacher. And he said, teacher, I met so-and-so who did this. And the teacher says, yes, we taught that. Why didn't you teach me? Well, you chose not to be there that day when we taught that. And I don't teach the same thing again and again and again. I teach it once. And if the student is ready, he will pick it up and learn and benefit from it. Now, what's the benefit from the idea of dissecting an ant and putting it back together again? Whatever could be the benefit of doing such a horrendous thing? Well, the benefit was, life does not end just because the body is separated. The ant is just as much there in separation as it was in togetherness. And he could put it back together again. Now, what if he would step on the ant and squash it? Could he bring it back together again? Well, Jesus taught, if you take my body and you cut it up in small pieces and throw it to the farthest corners of the earth, should I choose to want my body again, use my body, it will be there instantly for me, wherever it may be. It doesn't matter. Did you read that in the Bible? Check. It's very interesting. He says a lot of very interesting things. Now, our life, our body, our being is all one. We cannot be separated. We are immortal. We are eternal. We are wonderful. Are you ready for the adoption of that young man who would join the family of that firm? Are you ready for such a thing? Are you ready for the world to look at you and say, what quality that person is? What quality that person is? Ooh-wee! How wonderful. Yeah, you look at Kate and Henry, or whatever the guys' are, names are, that just got married in the British court. The Prince Harry, is it, that got married?
William.
Prince William and Kate. So, what do they look like? You see them on television, you see them in the newscast, and you see them in the newspapers, and they're always dignified. They're out jogging, and they're dignified. They're out talking to groups, and they're dignified. They're not superior. They're dignified by their character that is dignified in itself. They have an intuitiveness within them that makes them respectable, makes them wonderful. You guys could have that too. But you mess up your whole life with one thing, with a false humility. Oh, not me. Yes, you. If you would just turn around, make a turnaround, and say, I am that I am that I am. I like me, I like me, I like me. And be that, you would be the master of all. You would be the creator of all. You would have every good thing in your life. But because you have such a woe-begone, unhappy, sad effect about your face, about your body, about yourself. Now, are there any very beautiful girls in this room? Anyone can answer the question if you want.
Yes.
Thank you. At least you got your eyes open. Are there any beautiful girls? Will a beautiful girl please stand up? Just one. So forth. Stand up. Wow. You're good. Is she beautiful?
Yes.
Is she wonderful?
Yes.
Would she win any beauty contest? Not necessarily. Not necessarily, but will she win the beauty contest here of who she is? Yes. Is she fantastic? Is she fabulous? Is she marvelous? Is she great? Yes. What makes her marvelous? What makes her great? What makes her fantastic? She likes herself. Now, is this young lady over here, what is it, Naomi? Is that your name, Naomi?
Yes.
Naomi, you can speak up if you like. Is your name Naomi?
Yes.
Speak up.
Yes, Naomi.
Speak up.
Naomi.
Naomi. Speak up. My name is
Naomi.
Naomi.
Nobody help her, please, because your name is not Naomi. If you are, we'll find out and give you a skirt and give you a dress. Now, Naomi, are you a beautiful girl?
I am.
I am. Naomi, do you dress your hair to make you look very charming? Yes.
Yes.
Don't, hey, do you dress your hair to make you look not charming?
Yes.
No, no. You don't dress your hair to make you look not charming. You dress your hair to make you look charming, right? Okay. Do you wear clothing that accentuates your beautiful figure? Yes. And do you have a beautiful figure? Yes. Don't be so humble. It's a false humility. It's stupid humility because it's not true. If you said you're not beautiful and you are, you're a liar. Because you are beautiful too. Now, Sybil, what is she? Is she beautiful?
She is beautiful.
Is she lovely?
Yes.
Does Sybil wear clothing that accentuates her lovely figure?
Yes.
Does Sybil have a pronounced breast? Not necessarily. She has a good breast, but not pronounced. Does Sybil have a pronounced bottom? But no. Not particularly. Does Sybil have a very slim figure or just a nice figure?
Yes.
Now, Naomi, does she have a slim figure or does she have a pronounced figure? Does she have a figure that is rather outstanding? You see, these are things that are. Now, is your figure bad?
No.
Your figure is very good. Is her figure bad?
No.
Her figure is very good. Now, when we like our figure, let's see, what is your name over there? You are Dina? Are you Dina?
Yes.
Yeah, you're Dina. You're 22 years old, isn't it? Or 20 years old or something? Yeah. Are you beautiful?
Yes.
Do you wear clothing that makes your figure just stand out and shout howdy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do the boys look at you and say, whew, what a lovely creature? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Would every man on the face of the earth like to have you as their very special person?
Yes.
Yes. Are you selective who you allow to have you as a special person? Yes. And do you only choose people who are absolutely magnificent like you are? Okay. Now, you see, we got that taken care of. Now, I think we have Mary over here, and we have Peace there. And then I think we'd be covering all the feminine. Any more women around here that I am missing?
Iffy.
Huh?
Iffy.
Iffy. Oh, of course you got a skirt on there. Iffy. Yes, Iffy. Iffy, are you beautiful?
Yes.
Of course. Iffy, are you desirable? Oh, yes. Iffy, does everyone in the world think that you just are so much fun to be with?
Yes.
Yes. And are you so much fun to be with?
Yes.
Now, are you fun to be with because you're a bad girl or because you're a good girl?
I'm a good girl.
You're a what?
A good girl.
You're a what?
I'm a good girl.
A teacher?
I'm a good girl.
You're a good girl? Oh, why didn't it come out like that when I was listening? Are you really a good girl?
Yes.
Does everyone say you're a good girl? Does everyone think that you have a charisma that just doesn't stop? That you have such a wonderful smiling nature? You have such a joyous something about you that makes them want to be happy whenever they're with you?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's nice, huh?
Yes.
Okay, now, what do you do with that? Do you use it to wrap your daddy around your little finger? Or do you use it to be who you are, a wonderful, beautiful young lady?
Yes.
Yes. You see, we don't need to wrap the world around our finger. We be ourselves. Do you like yourself?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And do you have a nice family?
Yes.
You want some rich family to come along and adopt you?
Yes.
Yes? Oh, perhaps there's some benefit there too. But think of this. Think of this, Iffy. If you are as wonderful as you are, beautiful as you are, thoughtful as you are, loving as you are, desirable as you are for a daughter, a friend, a person in our world, in our family, what is missing in your family that is present in a very rich family? And so you say, money. You say, if we were a rich family, we'd have lots of money. Well, we have good money, but we don't have lots of money. Now, how would you create a family in which you live, and the one that we got right now, as having all the money in the world that pleases them? How would you create that? Would you say, my family has lots of money? Good start,
yes.
Huh? My family, now remember this one, my family is independently wealthy. You know what that means?
Yes.
My family has enough money for whatever they choose to do. Whatever they choose to do. It's not a matter of having a lot or a little. It's whatever. If my daddy says he wants to buy a yacht, he can buy a yacht. And he can run it. And he can hire sailors to run it, and he can hire people to take him where he wants to. If my dad wants to rent or buy a Learjet to travel around the world, he does and he can. Now you see, if you have that mentality, then you are creating for yourself a family that has all the things that... Now, what else does a rich family have, theoretically? A rich family has quality. They have character. They have the feeling that they always do what is right. They stand up in a way that when the community looks at them and says, yes, they are good people. Yes, they are beautiful people. Now, this is the type of thing that we want in our family. We want quality in our family. We want in our family the idea that we have a good reputation. We have good understanding. We are good people. Now, is your family a good family?
Yes.
All right. Then, you see, you've already got that. Now, what's missing? Just one little thing. One little thing. And peace, what is that? That I'm independently wealthy. Now, do you think peace is independently wealthy?
Yes.
Does she have the unpurchasable love of the universe? You can't buy the love that she has. From her mommy, her daddy, her sisters and brothers, she has that love you can't begin to buy. It's so magnificent. Now, would she say she was that she's wealthy?
Yes.
Unconditionally wealthy? How do we say that? Independently wealthy. Is she independently wealthy?
Yes.
Are you independently wealthy?
Yes.
Do you like being independently wealthy?
Yes.
What happens when you're independently wealthy?
We have enough money to fulfill their wish.
No, you have no needs. Because you take care of it. You have no needs. You have no needs when you're independently wealthy. Not that you have the money to buy anything you want, which is true. But you have no needs. You don't want anything anymore. Why do you want a yacht to go on the ocean when the ocean isn't what pleases you? Why do you want to have a big house to live in where you have so many rooms and the family have to come running from their rooms across the football field to get to where you are, and by the time they get to you, they're tired? So big a house, and people live in houses like that called castles, you know, and it's so silly. Now, people have four-bedroom houses and five-bedroom houses and six-bedroom houses, seven-bedroom houses. Do you know who the happiest people in Nigeria are? The people who have a one-bedroom house with a same bedroom for the living room and the dining room and the kitchen and everything. And they have one bed where Mama and Daddy and all the kids sleep in the same bed. Oh, you think, that is not too cool. But yet, that's the happiest family in the world. They are the closest, most loving, caring. There's no sexual impropriety there. There is no sexual thinking impropriety. There's no attitude of anything right or wrong. It's just that's the way it is. This is the way families had been traditionally. This is the way families started out, and this is the way families oftentimes are. And what happens when people lose all their fortune? They go from their big place down to a little place, and for the first time in their life, they get to know who's in their family and enjoy their family and enjoy each other. We always talk about wanting big things, wanting glorious things, and we don't really want that. We don't really like that. What do you think of that the Dyke's car out here? Isn't that the craziest little thing you ever saw? Little yellow motorcycle type bike car. And what happens when they ride in there? They're just as happy as can be. They're just snug as a bug in a rug. They can have their Jeep, they can have their Mercedes, they can have all the other things, but it doesn't mean a thing to them compared to that particular car, which they can afford and they enjoy. Now, why do they have it? Why did they get it? Why? It's an old, used one, but it works, and it takes them where they want to go, and they enjoy it, and they delight in it. Why didn't they buy something more significant? Because they didn't need it. That was all they needed. That was what they could afford, and they now have it, and they're enjoying it. You got your big car, and you have all your family in your car, and you go with them everywhere, and you're just having a great time. But what's happening to you? Are you happy? In the back corner of the back seat, there's some of the kids there in the other back corner, and then on the fold-down seats in the middle are some more kids, and then behind the sliding door is some more kids and so forth, and the family. What kind of togetherness is that, huh? It's nice. Nice to have a big, big vehicle to take a big, big family places. But when Daddy wants to get close to his kids, he takes one kid at a time. When Mommy wants to help her child overcome some fear or some condition, she takes the one kid at a time, not all of them, because all of them aren't ready to understand what's going on when the mother is working with the child, helping the child to be themselves and have fun and to do great things. It's fantastic. Now, what about you? What about you? Where are you on this pyramid of finding who you are and what you want? Where are you? Are you at the point that says, I am, or at the point that says, I want? Are you at the point that says, I like me, or at the point of saying, I wish I were more likable? See, a lot of people say they wish they were more likable, and of course they never will be likable, because they wish it, and it's not who they are. Who are you? Are you a beautiful person? Are you a sensible person? Are you a person where when your children come in the house, the first person they want to greet is you? They run to you and throw their arms around you and say, Mommy or Daddy or both, you know. And they say, oh, I'm so glad to be home. I'm so glad to be with my family. People who love me and care about me. People who think that I'm a good and wonderful person. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice if that were true? Sometimes we force it. Come, give Daddy a hug. Come, give Mommy a hug. If it doesn't come naturally, don't force it, because it's not going to do what you think it should do. You be the first one to reach out with a hug. You be the first one to reach out with your love. You be the first one. I go to the International New Thought Alliance meetings, and as I go to these meetings, I'm a hugger, and I hug people. And I hug people, I don't know who they are, but they're there, and they're at the meeting, so they must be part of the alliance. They may be the busboy or something like that, but I hug people. And they look at me, and they smile. And then they'll go away, and they'll say, you know, he hugs people. He hugs people. And the person they talk to will say, yes, that's true. He hugs people. He likes everybody. He has unconditional love. And so the next thing I know, here's that same bellboy, that same person, whoever it may be, coming back to do something unnecessary to get another hug. Because they don't get hugs much in their world. They don't get sharing of love unconditionally in their world. When we can love unconditionally and share unconditionally, we are doing a service. We are being great. We are being G-O-D.
God.
God. Does God love all of its creation unconditionally?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you do any less?
No.
No.
Can you, as you meet the people in your life, the first thing you do, you reach out with your arms and you snuggle them rather than shake hands? Can you be the kind of person who is a snuggler rather than a handshaker?
Yes.
It takes a little training. And then people get used to it. They say, oh, that's just their way. They're huggers. They're not handshakers. They're people who care. People who have a sort of an inner depth, an inner blessing, an inner love. And that's pretty wonderful. Okay, now, our topic is this part here, I think. Number 14. Beyond the known universe. No, that's not right. It's, what's our topic?
Beyond
the known universe.
Beyond. Oh, maybe if I put my glasses on, I'll see what the words are. Okay. Beyond the universe, the known universe, exists space so grand that and so inclusive that it boggles the thought. Space so endless and yet existenceless, imagination takes flight and creativity continues. Now, what does that all mean? How does that fit in with what we're talking about here? What it fits in with is you have just begun to be and see and know this universe that you're in. Is this universe a good universe? Yes. Is this universe a big universe? Yes. Is this universe a happy universe? Yes. Is this universe going to do great and wonderful things? Yes. Now, before we get to the great and wonderful things, think of this. This universe keeps exploding and expanding. The stars in this universe keep growing and exploding. The black holes of this universe keep growing, eating up stars, eating up space, and then expanding and blowing apart, having a new universe begin, which is how our universe supposedly began 15 billion years ago. Now, over time, change will take place. The universe will be sharing different poises. Its broadness and its tremendousness is just utterly amazing. Now, it's quite possible that you, who live in a very advanced mental attitude civilization, might say to yourself, I would like to be like Superman's daddy and mommy, where they decided to send him to another planet because their planet was going to be destroyed. And so they sent him from the planet Krypton to Earth. And they sent him in a capsule. And there are two stories about the capsule. One, he lands up in the North Pole, and the other, he lands on a farm. Well, the one where he lands on the farm is more charming, so they're using that most of the time. But could there ever be a Superman? Could there ever be a being sent off from a planet that is going to be destroyed and come to another planet like Earth? Yeah. Does it happen very often? No. or yes? How often does it happen? As often as your thought thinks that it might happen. Now, the universes are constantly growing and expanding and so forth. Now, Earth will be here for many millions of years, perhaps more billions of years. And you will live through many lifetimes in those billions of years, but who do you think it is that populates the Earth? Who do you think it is that comes from the 100,000 people to 1 million people to 1 billion people to 7 billion people today? Who are those people? Are those new consciousnesses? Are those people who have left their body behind and found a new place on the same planet, the same universe? Possible. And would they like to have that universe and that planet be continued to be useful and beneficial to them? Yes, that would seem reasonable. How can they have the universe, the planet, and the experience be beneficial to them if they're just going to populate it and in the process sort of destroy it by making the economy completely out of line, by getting rid of the ecology and the environment and upsetting everything? How can they bring it in balance? You say, boy, Herb, we were doing so good before you started talking about that stuff. Well, you're always doing good. And you're always doing good because you're the master. Now, what is that stuff all about that we're talking? What we're saying is God, in its allness, has no concern about humanity. It has only concern about itself. Now, this story is one you may know. It's a story of a little boy. And he's playing in the backyard or in the front yard. And the water is running, you know, it just rained. And the water is running out. And so he's sitting there and he has his little leaves that he makes boats out of. And sticks that he makes boats out of. And then he has his ants that has be the people who live where he is. And these people are just wonderful. And so he plays with them. And he's playing with them with the water running by, making a lake and a river, and he's just having a good time. And then his mommy says, "Time to come in, sweetheart." And so he stands up and he looks at his creation. He looks at his universe, his playground, or his area, his world. And what does he do? He says, "Oh, okay." And so he leaves his world. His world is no longer going to have his attention. So he jumps up in the air and punches down right in the middle of his lake, right in the middle of his river, right in the middle of his boats and his ants and all these people, and phew, they're gone. Now, you say, that's not just too nice. That's not just too cool. Yes, that's very cool. There is no personal relationship between the boy and his creation. He just creates them and releases them to do whatever they want to do. The infinite creative cause creates us and releases us to whatever we want to do. If we want to make a heaven on earth out of our earth, we can do that. And we've been told how to do it, shown how to do it by our divine nature, and we don't do it. How do you make a heaven on earth? You make a heaven on earth by saying, all is good and very good. You make a heaven on earth by saying, I like me. You make a heaven on earth by saying, there now is peace on earth and it began with me. You make a heaven on earth by everything you do. Everything you think, everything you say. Now, if you're going to have so much fun and become a scientist, and as you become a scientist, you study the tectonic plates that undergird the earth, and these are sheets of stone that are moving around like a bald-headed or like a wig on a head. And these tectonic plates are moving around, and they're sometimes destroying the earth above it, and sometimes they're going down below, causing tidal waves that come up and wash out the seaside communities and things like that. Now, you are doing that. You, individually, are doing that. You're the ones who are saying that is what's taking place. You're the scientists who are investigating how it's done. You understand how it's done. You tell the people how it's done. And then the people say, oh, I see, that's how it's done. And then along comes Chidabe. And Chidabe decides that's not going to be that way. He says, okay, this is an appearance that the tectonic plates do this. This is an appearance that the tidal waves do this. I am the Lord of Peace. Lord God Chidabe. Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, sir, God, how do you want the world to be? Do you want the world to be all messed up by the tectonic plates, all messed up by volcanoes that are causing it, all messed up by tidal waves, by tsunamis?
No.
Do you want, no?
Yes.
No, you said?
Yes. No.
Yeah, no. Right. Okay. Then what are you going to do about it? How are you going to put a cause in motion that does not take place? Not that that doesn't take place, but what are you going to put the cause in motion for? There now is peace on earth, huh?
Now there's peace.
Okay. There now is peace on earth. We want to speak our word for the other countries of the world saying there's peace on earth. Why not speak our word for the tectonic plates, for the volcanoes, for the hurricanes, for the floods, for all of these things that are detrimental to the earth, all these things that are detrimental to humanity? Do you think that mankind could afford to live in an ideal, on an ideal planet?
Yes.
Yes.
Very much so. Why doesn't man live on an ideal planet? He does. He does. But Chitterby has not been at work. He has been laying back, enjoying his yacht, enjoying his telephones, and enjoying all these things, and not paying attention to the job that he has. He is Mr. what? Who are you? Mr. Peace. He is Mr. Peace. Not peace between people, which is good, but peace for the earth. All the earth is in divine order. Could we be a planet out here floating in space, just part of a planetary system, and be an ideal planet?
Yes.
Why not? Could we be a planet that has perfect vegetation, perfect rainfall, perfect whatever things we're used to having? Or could we be a planet that doesn't even need rain, doesn't even need the sun, doesn't even need to have fertilizer or other things? The sun is there perhaps for light and other sources, but we don't need it for growing things. All things exist. Could we do that?
Yes.
We sure could. Yes. Now, why is it the opposite is taking place? From historical times of the ancient Jews and going beyond them to the Aryans who lived up in northern Asia, who came down into India and brought their teachings down there, why did these people, ancient peoples, carry with them the idea that the earth is a mess? Why? They brought that along because that's what they have lived through. They lived through volcanoes. They lived through hurricanes. They lived through the land being unstable. Do you think there were any areas of the earth where the land has been somewhat stable for a great, great length of time? Yes. Many places. Could it be that all places on the surface of the earth live in a stability? Sure.
Yeah.
Could it be that our earth is the ideal paradise for all humanity? Sure.
Yes.
Would people naturally have the right number of children to keep the population going on, doing whatever it's right for it to do and good for it to do? Sure. Could you, now this is an interesting point, could you, with your genius, by saying, I like me and all that sort of stuff, could you, with your genius, say, there now is a planet over here, ideal for humanity, perfect in every way, and it exists. And then teleport yourself or others to that planet to enjoy it. And it's an ideal planet. Could you do that? Sure you could. Could you have this planet right here be the ideal planet where it needs nothing else? Yes. Could you have this planet be the perfect planet for an infinite, not even an infinite number of years, an eternal number of years, that forever this planet is the ideal planet, and the perfect flow, ebb and tide of people, of circumstances? Okay, now, we say yes to that. Now, could you create existence that exists eternally with perfect health, perfect paradise to live in, and it does not need to die? Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah,
we can do that. Now, do you want to? And the answer is no. Because you are looking at the trouble, the earthquakes, the floods, the waves coming up, and you're looking at all that nonsense, and you're seeing that nonsense, and you're empowering that nonsense, where you could be empowering the ideal earth that we could enjoy, and many people do. I told you the story about Sylvia's brother, and her brother passed on with an illness, and he decided to make himself a paradise in the Himalayan mountains, all by himself. So he made himself this paradise in the Himalayan mountains, and she wanted to go visit him. And so we went to visit him. And when we were there, he recognized his sister, and he said to her, what are you doing here? You know, I've come to see you. And he said, well, that's nice. And then when she finished her visit, she says, can I come back again? He said, well, if you must, you can come back, but I'd rather not. I'm here because I want to be here and I want to be alone. I want to live my paradise by myself, you know. That's just the way I am. Now, could he do that? Sure he could. Did he do that?
Yes.
Sure he did. Is that just my fantasy, my telling you about this experience with him? No, it's real. You can have the same real experiences I have. They sort of buff up, build up the concept that this does really exist. Is there really a heaven on earth? There sure is. Is there really purity, wholeness, and goodness in all humanity here and now? Is every human being a divine human being?
Yes.
Is every human being God?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And if every human being is God, they may have their world exactly like they'd like to have it. Exactly. Now, how the world is at the moment tells us how people like to have it. Now, are there people who would like to have a world that, like you'd like to have? A world of purity, of goodness, of wholeness, of perfection, of right action? Are there people who'd like that? And the answer is yes. Would you like to be part of those people? And the answer is, why not? Why not? All right, well, let's take a pause, and then when we come back, let's talk about that or whatever else you like. How do we establish heaven on earth? And are we being realistic by expecting to establish heaven on earth? Okay, let's come back at 15:15. Thank you.